We're going to be studying tonight in John the 15th chapter. If you want to turn in your Bibles there, John the 15th chapter. There's a song in the songbook, I think. I wanted to look at this. Number 75 that has to do with our study tonight. Number 75. It's a song called I Am the Vine. I want us to think about this song for a minute. I want to read this with you. And then we're going to read a little bit about the vine and the branches. And you'll give a little bit more of a meaning to this song. I like this really well. It says, I am the vine and ye are the branches. Bear precious fruit for Jesus today. Branches in Him no fruit ever bearing. Jesus has said, He taketh away. Verse 2 says, Now ye are clean through words I have spoken. Living in me, much fruit ye shall bear. Dwelling in you, my promise unbroken. Glory in heaven, with me ye shall share. Then verse number 3 says, Yes, by your fruits the world is to know you. Walking in love as children of day. Follow your guide. He passeth before you, leading to realms of glorious day. I am the vine, and ye are the branches. I am the vine, be faithful and true. Ask what ye will, your prayer shall be granted. The Father loved me, so I have loved you. It was on the last night when Jesus was with his disciples. They had gathered in an upper room. The exact location, we're not sure of. And as he talked to them in chapter 13 and chapter 14, as he comes to the end of chapter 13, he says to them, Arise, get up, and let us go from here. And evidently they walked a good distance over the course of the next hour or so, and they ended up in the Garden of Gethsemane. When we get to chapter 18 of John in verse 1, it says, When Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the ravine of the Kidron, where there was a garden in which he entered with his disciples. And then the story continues there where Jesus was arrested. But I suppose that along the way, when he left this room where he had met with his disciples, there must have been great vineyards along the way, fields that he passed, because he talks to them about these great vineyards, and I guess that was a common occupation in Palestine. And so I want us to read what he said to them as he walked along from that, as he left that upper room, and he walked with his disciples until they got to the Garden of Gethsemane. And then we're going to talk about some of the significance of that to us. John chapter 15, and let's just read the first 10 verses. John chapter 15, the Gospel of John, verse 1 through 10. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes it, so that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, so neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, and you are the branches. He who abides in me, and I in him, he bears much fruit, for apart from me you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away as a branch and dries up. And they gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. Just as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments, and abide in his love. Verse 11, These things I have spoken to you, so that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be made full. Jesus begins by saying that he is the true vine. I am the true vine. The contrast, as Jesus walked along that road with his disciples, was not really between himself and these grapevines that were along the side of the road, but really between him and the nation of Israel, who had failed to fulfill or produce what God had intended them to produce. I've never been there. Maybe Mo could tell you about this, but on the gate of the temple, there was a relief of a great golden vine. And on some of the coins of Israel, Israel was represented by a vine in their day. Israel was to God what a vineyard was to the farmer. And that's an illustration that was used quite frequently in the Old Testament. I want to read with you real quickly. Go back to Isaiah, the Old Testament, the book of Isaiah, chapter 5. Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 7. He says here, Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 7, "For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah his delightful plant." This was God's plan. It was Israel. And God had some great hopes for his people. In fact, look in verse 1 and 2. Isaiah chapter 5, verse 1 and 2, he had great hopes for them. He said, "Let me sing now for my well-beloved a song of my beloved concerning his vineyard. My well-beloved had a vineyard on a fertile hill, and he dug it all around and removed its stones, and he planted it with the choicest vine, and he built a tower in the middle of it, and he hewed out a wine vat in it, and he expected it to produce good grapes." God had great hopes, like a farmer does for his vineyard when he plants it. He expected good grapes, but it turned out to be very disappointing. And it says at the end, in verse 7 at the end, it says, "For the vineyard of the Lord is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah his delightful plant. Thus he looked for justice, but behold bloodshed, and for righteousness, but behold a cry of distress." And so when Jesus said to his disciples that day as they're walking along that path, passing by those grape vineyards, and he says, "I am the true vine," he's setting himself in contrast to Israel, who should have been a vine that God had planted, but it was a failure. It had not produced what God intended it produced. And then Jesus says to them, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser." In other words, you have the farmer who goes out and he works with the vine to make it accomplish the purpose that he has in mind for it. And Jesus says, "I'm the vine and my Father is the vine dresser." And I want to suggest to you what he's saying to them is that he was saying to his disciples that everything that was about to happen to him, his arrest, his crucifixion, all of the things they were about to see, was a part of God's plan. Nothing that was about to happen happened because it was an accident, because it was a mistake, because something went wrong. But God was in charge of that. And the disciples needed to hear that. They needed to hear that again and again, because soon they would be scattered like sheep because they wouldn't understand what was happening. So Jesus is the true vine, and his Father is the vine dresser, preparing the vine to accomplish his will and his purpose. Now, moving more towards us and thinking about how that applies to us, what about the branches? Because in this little section, this little text, the branches have a singular purpose. You probably can tell me what that is. What is the sole purpose of a grapevine? Well, it's not a decorative plant. Never seen anybody put a grapevine in their house. And it's not a plant for shade. Though I did see somebody put one on a trellis one time that was kind of interesting. It did kind of shade it, but that's not its purpose. Its purpose is to bear fruit, is to produce grapes. And it's interesting that it's mentioned five times in this text. He says in verse 2, "Every branch that's in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes it so it may bear more fruit." Verse 4, "Abide in me and I in you. As a branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, so neither can you unless you abide in me." I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and in, I in him, he bears much fruit. For apart from me, he can do nothing. The purpose of a branch is to bear fruit. And there are two kinds of branches in this text, aren't there? There's the branches that bear no fruit. And he says in verse 2, every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he is taken away, finally. He's cut off. And then there's the branch that produces fruit. And they are pruned, he says in verse 2. He prunes it so that it might bear much more fruit. John chapter 15 and verse 5 says, I am the vine and you are the branches. So I want to say to you tonight that every one of us here, everyone in this audience who is a disciple of Jesus, is to think of himself as a branch. And we are either going to fall in one of two categories. Either we are a branch that bears fruit, or a branch that is not producing fruit. And if fruit bearing is so critical, if that's what our purpose is, then we need to know two things tonight. We need to know what the fruit is, and we need to know how that we can bear it, because it's essential. First of all, what is necessary to bear fruit in Christ? Verse number 4. He says, abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, so neither can you unless you abide in me. 10 times in these 10 verses, he talks about abiding in him, or in you. We are a part of Jesus like a branch is part of a grapevine. It really is just a way to describe a very intimate union. Something that's so intimately connected that Jesus becomes the source of all of our strength. He is the source of our nourishment. He is the source of our life. Just like a vine is to the branch on a grapevine. And he says in verse 5, apart from me, you can do nothing. A branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it's attached to the vine. And so neither can you, he says in verse 4, unless you abide in me. And so like a branch that's tied to the vine, he's saying that the Christian is tied to the power of heaven. That's our source of power. The secret, you know what the secret to spiritual life is? I can tell you what that is. The secret to spiritual life is a close union with the vine. That's where the source of life is. Our life, remember what Paul said in Colossians 3? He said, our life is hidden in him. Christ, who is our life. We've got to have some type of an intimate relationship with him. But what does that mean? I mean, what does it mean to abide in him? That sounds kind of interesting, sounds kind of, but it doesn't talk to us in concrete terms. What does it mean to abide in the vine? Well, let's look at some verses here and see if you can discover that. Chapter 15, verse 5, or 15, verse 7. He says, if you abide in me, and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. Verse 10, chapter 15, verse 10. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. Go back to chapter 14 and verse 21. He who has my commandments and keeps them is the one who loves me, and he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and will disclose myself to him. And in verse 23, chapter 14, verse 23, he says, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our abode with him. Abiding means obey. We live and have life as we abide in his will. What did it mean for Jesus to abide in the Father's love? Well, let's look at a series of verses that kind of reflect that. Go back to John chapter 4. Let's just look at a few verses in the book of John. Again, John chapter 4, verse 34. What did it mean for Jesus to abide in the Father's love? Chapter 4, verse 34 says, Jesus said to them, "My food is to do the will of Him who sent me and to accomplish His work." Chapter 5, verse 30 says, "I can do nothing on my own initiative. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of Him who sent me." Chapter 6 and verse 38 says, "For I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of Him who sent me." Chapter 15, verse 10. Chapter 15, verse 10. "If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in His love." In chapter 17 and verse 4, you know, He says, "I glorified you on earth, having accomplished the work which you have given me to do." So for us to abide in the Father's love is to do the will of the Father. It's just that simple. And what is it that sets apart a true disciple from a false one? How do you know the difference in a true disciple and a false one? A true branch from a fake. Is it not the word that he walks by? Does that not define what we are? Jesus said, "Sanctify them in truth, for your word is truth." Those who are his are set apart in truth. That's just daily living. I mean, it's where the rubber hits the road. It's all that we're talking about in the book of James. James is all about how we put our faith into practice and live every day, sharing the character of Jesus, His purpose, in every decision, whether it's at home or at school or whether it's when we're with our brethren. It's about walking in His will. A lot of disciples don't have Jesus abiding in them because they don't keep His word. Jesus said, there are a lot of Jews that follow Jesus and listen to Him. They followed Him all the time, but He said, "You're not really my disciples." He said in John chapter 8, verse 31, Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed Him, here's some Jews that believed Him, were believers, at least as to some degree. He says, "If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine." See, a lot of disciples don't have Him abiding in them because they don't keep His word. To abide means to stay, means to remain within. And that's why John really spends just a lot of time trying to emphasize that in different ways. He'll come back to that in his little letters when he said in 2 John verse 9, he said that anyone who goes too far and does not abide in the teaching of Christ does not have God. You see that? It's this relationship, this source of life exists when I abide in the teaching, when I walk in His will. So do you think of Him often? Does our mind constantly run to Him during the day? Do we think about Jesus? Is He the one that we want to spend time with? What is necessary now to bear fruit in Him? What's necessary if we're going to bear fruit? We know that fruit bearing is absolutely essential. It's part of that text. It said if we don't bear fruit, then He's going to cut us off and burn us. So what is it? What is necessary to bear fruit in Him? Well, John chapter 15 again. Let's look there. In verse 7. John chapter 15, verse 7. He said, "If you abide in me and my word abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you." In verse 16 of chapter 15, he says, "You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you would go and bear fruit and that your fruit would remain, so that whatever you ask of the Father in my name, He may give you." I mean, the first thing that is absolutely necessary for us to bear fruit in Him is that we have to ask for help. We have to ask for God's help. We cannot do that on our own. If we try to do things on our own and look for our own power and our own capacity, we're not going to do it. And I don't mean that means we can just, you know, we don't have to put any effort into it. I mean we don't have to try and work and do our very best, but we are not going to succeed if we do not search for help in Him. And how often we fail to look for help. I think in the early part of the work of the apostles, they found that it was going to be essential to search for God's help to bear fruit. In Acts chapter 4, verse 23, Acts chapter 4, verse 23, not too many weeks or too many months after the beginning of the work that the apostles did, the conversions of the Christians, they were arrested and thrown in jail, Peter and John were. And when they were released, it says, what did they do? What did they do? Chapter 4 and verse 23. When they had been released, they went to their own companions. They went to their companions. They reported all that the chief priests and elders had said to them. And when they heard this, they lifted up their voices to God with one accord. And they pray to Him. And there's this prayer. And notice when they get down to verse 28, they said, or 29, they said, and now, Lord, take note of their threats and grant that your bondservants may speak your word with all confidence while you extend your hand to heal and signs and wonders take place through the name of your holy servant Jesus. And when they had prayed, the place where they had gathered was shaken and they were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak the word of God with boldness. Here are men who looked at the circumstances they were about to start dealing with, and they realized they needed help. And so they prayed, and God responded. And that's what we have to do. It was essential for their work. We cannot make this happen on our own. And I think this is a good illustration of where a branch is not going to act independently of the vine. Here are the apostles, and they're not going to act independently of Jesus. They are asking for His help. And how, you know, Jesus said, apart from me, you can do what? Nothing. We can do nothing without Him. And so that is essential to fruit bearing. Now, the next thing I want to talk to you about is, what is the fruit? I mean, clearly it's essential. If we bear no fruit, Jesus said you'll be cut off. He said to His disciples they would be cut off and they would be burned. Chapter 15 and verse 6. If anyone doesn't abide in me, John 15 and verse 6, he is thrown away as a branch and dries up, and they gather them and they cast them into the fire and they are burned. Is it important that we bear fruit? We have to bear fruit. It is essential. And He says it two or three times in here that not only are we to bear fruit, but we're to bear much more fruit. He intends us not just to bear a little, but to bear much throughout our lives. He says in verse 5, I am the vine, and you are the branches, and he who abides in me and I in him, he bears much fruit. In verse 8, he says, my Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit. So prove to be my disciples. And so whatever this fruit is, it's absolutely critical. So what is it? Well, let's look at some possibilities. We'll look at two or three verses, or a few verses here. Philippians chapter 1, verse 9 through 11. It could be that he's talking about the fruit of righteousness. The idea of developing, I think, a right character, a right doing what is right. Look in chapter 1 of Philippians, verse 9 through 11. He says, in this I pray that your love may abound still more and more in real knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve the things that are excellent, in order to be sincere and blameless until the day of Christ, having been filled with the fruit of righteousness, which comes through Jesus Christ, to the glory and the praise of God. So it could be the fruit of righteousness that he's talking about, when he says we need to bear much fruit. Or it could be the character, or it could be the deeds that reflect a certain kind of character that's within. Look, if you would, in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 16. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 16. Jesus was talking about false teachers and warning those who would follow him about being misled. And he said, you will know them by their fruits. Grapes are not gathered from thorn bushes, nor figs from thistles, are they? And so every good tree bears good fruit, but every bad tree bears bad fruit. So the deeds of these people would reflect the certain the kind of character that's within. So he could be talking about the fruit being the deeds that are done, or the fruit may be the character of the Lord that we develop. Looking in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 22. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 22. He says, the fruit of the Spirit is love and joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. So here's a fruit that's produced when we walk by the Spirit. And clear, this is a character, a certain kind of character that we ought to develop within. It could be something else. Look over in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 11. Hebrews chapter 12, the fruit could be the product of the discipline that God uses to mature us, help us grow. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11 says, all discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. And yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. And so through our life, as God corrects us and helps to correct our course in various ways, there's going to be a type of fruit that's produced as a result of that kind of discipline. We could look in James chapter 3 and see it could be the seed whose fruit is righteousness. Look in James chapter 3, verse 17 and 18. James says, but the wisdom from above is pure and peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy, and the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So this wisdom that comes from above, the seed whose fruit is righteousness, he could have something in mind about that. We think about maybe the parable of the soils. So they sowed the seed and it landed in good and honest hearts. It produced something in people's lives. We could look in Ephesians chapter 5 and find out that the fruit is goodness and righteousness and truth. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8. Paul said, for you are formerly darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth. And so that can be the thing that Jesus had in mind as he talked about bearing much fruit. Just kind of compile some of the different places in the New Testament that talks about this fruit bearing, because it's essential. We need to think about bearing fruit and what that might involve. Hebrews chapter 5, this is the last passage on this. He says in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 11 and 12, he says, concerning him we have much to say, and it's hard to explain since you have become dull of hearing. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God. And you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, as he is an infant. But solid food is for the mature, who because of the practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. It could be that the fruit is that we become teachers. We grow up. And we become more mature disciples who are able to teach in others. So this is the fruit. It shouldn't surprise us. You know, what was God looking for in Israel? Do you remember? He said, behold, he looked for justice, but behold, bloodshed. He looked for righteousness, but behold, a cry of distress. He expected his vine to produce good grapes, but instead it produced worthless ones. So, if what God found in Israel is that they were not bearing good fruit, that is, good godly character, is it any surprise that this is what Jesus said is so essential in his disciples? That's what he wants to see. And so, as we think about this tonight, I want you to think about, as a branch is to a vine, know, either we will live in Him or we will die without Him. Pretty strong, isn't it? I mean, that's what He said. He said either we will live in Him or we will die without Him. If you don't give yourself to Christ, you know, if you never attach yourself to the vine from where all life comes and all goodness comes, would it be too strong a statement to say that you will never accomplish anything of real importance? That you, because Jesus said you can do nothing. You know, would it be too strong to say, you know, apart from Christ, you know, you will not really have a meaning in life? What will you do apart from Christ? I mean, there's a lot of good things that we can do, you know, but all of our goals outside of Christ are going to be small and temporary. All of our motives will ultimately be, to some degree, selfish. And all of our efforts will at last be meaningless. And what about for those who are disciples who leave Him? Well, what if we are disciples but we decide to leave Him? What will we become? What will that do to us? You know, if you detach yourself from the vine, if you and what does that mean? That means you decide you're going to stop obeying Him. What does that mean? If you're just hanging around, maybe you're not putting any genuine effort into it. You're just kind of playing with religion. You know, there's certainly not going to be any joy in it. In fact, it's kind of a miserable experience if you think about it. It is because we've given up the only thing that gives real meaning to life. So Jesus concludes this little discourse here. At least this is where we're going to have to stop for tonight. In John chapter 15 and verse 11, He says, "These things I have spoken to you, so that My joy may be in you, and that your joy may be made full." Do you want joy? Do you want real fulfillment, to feel truly satisfied in this world? Then you need to attach yourself to the vine. You have to become a branch. And to do that, you have to come to Jesus in obedience. Maybe tonight that's what you need to do. Maybe you sense that your life is without meaning, that you are empty. Perhaps you know that you're dead. But there is life, and it's found in Jesus Christ. And this, we try to always extend that opportunity for people. Maybe you've been studying and thinking about that. Maybe you know that you need to commit yourself to serving Jesus Christ with your whole heart. People come to Jesus when they know that they are in an enemy of God, when they have no life, when they are guilty of their sins, and they need to be forgiven because they're in trouble. Don't come to God if you know that you're in trouble with Him. Because that's why we need to be baptized, to be forgiven for our sins, and to make ourselves right with Him. Would you do that tonight? Would you make this your night to begin your walk with Christ? Become a branch if you're not one, or maybe if you are a Christian and you've been not producing fruit, that you need to begin to abide in Him more diligently, walking in Him, trusting in Him, seeking Him with all your heart. We invite you to do that too while we stand and sing.